So next, on the remainder of the ISB update, I wanted, before answering any questions you may have, I wanted first to preempt the subject on agenda consultation 2022-2026. So we have some slides that I will try to comment very quickly. So we are beginning the discussions on the feedback received on this third agenda consultation, and we are beginning this next week, next Monday, whereby we will receive a feedback from the staff on what we heard from the consultation and begin to discuss this outcome. If you can show the next slide. So, in terms of at this stage, what we've heard, we've heard that the board's strategic direction is about right between the various activities that are flagged in the table at the bottom of the slide on research and standard setting project, maintenance and consistent application, and so on and so forth. Considering eventually some minor changes to rebalance the level of focus, so mainly eventually consider decreasing a bit the research and standard setting projects and increasing a bit the maintenance and consistent application, not to mention the fact to increase digital financial reporting and the understandability and accessibility of the standards. This to mention also the fact that we will have to dedicate as a board, the ISB, we will have to dedicate some time to interact with the ISSB, notably because there might be some subjects that will be of interest for both boards, such as, for instance, intangible items could be one subject or management commentary. We'll see that later on. And we heard some feedback also saying that we could partner with some national standard setter to help increase the board's capacity on some subjects. Next slide. So, our stakeholders generally agreed with the proposed criteria for assessing the priority for each project. We received also some feedback saying that we should not add too many new projects to the work plan. And of course, each new project will have a dedicated team and will take, obviously, some additional resources. And as I've said already, we will have to dedicate to derive some time to interact with the ISSB, notably on projects where both boards will work probably at the same time. Not to mention also what we heard on climate-related risk and pollutant pricing mechanism. So some of the most commonly suggested projects in alphabetical order, important to mention, not in importance of or due to the number of the feedbacks we received for them. So climate-related risk, cryptos, going concern, intangible items. I would rephrase it into intangible items rather than intangible assets. And the statement of cash flows and related matters. So, as mentioned, the team has posted in charge of analyzing the feedback on the third agenda consultation, posted the feedback analysis for the November board meeting. So those are available on our website. And we are asking whether or not you have any specific questions and above all feedback on this very high-level summary of the feedback we received so far. It will be probably one of your last chance to comment on this subject prior we set as a board our priority for the next 5 years. So please do jump in. Michael, you have a question? Am I correct?
On climate related risks, I mean, this one is a really interesting one. You know, I have been personally thinking about the impact of companies announcing net zero targets. I think companies are announcing those net zero targets. And, you know, I think in some cases, there is a lack of information about I would say the measurement techniques do need to be approved on the full scale of the emissions from scope one to scope three. And, you know, then you have to start assuming that there's going to be technological improvements, and a whole lot of things go into supporting that announcement. And, you know, what I've really started to consider is, you know, do we have an obligation? Should that be recognized? Especially when, you know, the company goes out to the public and announces this net zero target. I know in a lot of cases, I think it'd be extremely difficult to come up with what that estimate of the impact is going to be, because, you know, in a lot of cases, these are longer term targets. But as companies continue to announce publicly their intent to achieve these targets, as they announce publicly to adopt the science-based target initiative in terms of their glide path, it's really got me thinking about whether they do have a current period obligation that they need to start recognizing. And I think it's a really important issue. So, you know, I'm glad to see the board here tackling that one. It's extremely important. And then, of course, I think on crypto, I would just chime in that I think it's really important to pin that down. You know, I think in a lot of cases, when I think about crypto, I think about it as a currency. I think we really need to start thinking about these things as currency. You know, I know we had El Salvador adopt Bitcoin as its formal legal currency. I definitely believe that we need to start, as a profession, evolving our thinking from an accounting perspective on this. So, you know, very supportive to see that one there as well.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Michael. On climate, on your comments relating to climate, of course, they are already already materials, educational materials that were published, I think last year, last November by us, an article written by Nick to assess what is in the current literature to tackle the accounting issues, the accounting treatment of those issues. At this stage, but it's definitively something we will have to further consider, notably in relation to the work with the ISSB. Before I go to other members, I've seen Neely appearing on the screen. I don't know, Neely, whether you wanted to add anything. And sorry, I've not asked you before whether you want to add anything to what I've very briefly recapped, and notably the feedback we are after here.
Thank you, Bertrand. I don't have anything to add. I was just appearing on the screen to participate in the conversation, but no, please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Nelly. Jan, you have a comment.
Oops. Yeah, I mean, maybe a fairly obvious one, but there's no shortage of proposals kicking around the world now for sort of climate related risks and comments. I think you just want to make sure clear that you're not sort of duplicating the efforts that are going on elsewhere, that whatever the ISB proposes is very sort of focused on what we should be doing and not duplicating or stepping in other areas. I think I agree with crypto. It's clearly an area that's there's nothing there, and I think this is where we should be taking a lead. And things like intangibles and cash flows, that's very much in our area, and there are areas where the accounting is not so great, let's put it that way. So I think that those two, it's very much with us, the profession, to get our sort of our own house in order. So I would certainly support those.
And to better appreciate your comments on interaction with others, what do you have in mind as an example?
Well, I'm not exactly clear what the ISB would now propose to do on climate-related risks, bearing in mind we've got lots of other proposals coming from the EU. We have proposals in Switzerland. We have the ISSB. I don't know what... There's lots of demand for more disclosure, more information on ESG topics generally and climate topics specifically. So I think we just want to be careful we're not adding more in the accounting standards as well that's actually duplicating what is elsewhere, or actually taking away efforts that should be directed there, because there's only a finite amount of resources anybody has to actually look at these topics. So I think you just need to sort of position, you need whatever the ISB does, you need to position this very carefully within the overall picture, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's a fair statement, a fair comment. Yeah. Does anyone have any other feedback, comments? On this issue? No? Yeah, Tom, please.
I'll just really one quick one just on intangibles and looking at the feedback. We sort of have a split between people who would like to see more internally generated intangibles recognized and those who don't see recognition as being all that feasible but want an expanded set of disclosures. I might just throw those two possibilities out in case you guys have any views.
Does someone want to jump?
Yeah, I think the recognition is something you should look at. I mean, internally versus externally is basically a critical difference. I mean, certainly in our sector, you just end up with basically the same assets owned by the company. And if they're internally generated, they've got a book value of zero. And if you buy them through an M&A deal or something, they've got some huge value. So there is just a complete discrepancy there. In our sector, at least, the analysts, whatever we publish for intangible assets, they just kick it out and they do their own analysis on DCFs. So, the world does not need more disclosure. I think the actual recognition and measurement is a real topic. Yeah.
Thank you, Jan. No further question, comment, remark?
Can give one comment to Tom. I do think software development costs for a software as a service should be recognized as an intangible.
You mean both of them should be recognized as an intangible?
The development cost should be recognized as intangible. Yeah, the cost of the license itself is a prepaid. That's fine. Fine with that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Another subject I wanted to touch base on is the request for information on IFRS 9 classification and measurements. So request for information, you may have seen that has been issued in September 2021. The consultation period will end, I don't remember the exact date, but mid-January 2022, for us to rediscuss probably in Q2 2022. It covers only classification and measurements, i.e. basically presented all subjects except impairments and except hedge accounting. So the subjects on financial assets, so the business model, the SPPI test, the fair value changes in equity instruments, for financial liabilities, notably the presentation of own credit gains and losses, and on other topics, the modifications to contractual cash flows, the effective interest method, and the way the transition to IFRS 9 went. So I don't know whether you have any specific comment or question regarding this request for information that was sent in September. No comments or questions or anything? So maybe it's too early. I wanted to make two comments, if I may, two comments as a board member. The first one would be something we hear a lot from coming from Europe, notably, and from various jurisdictions in Europe, notably, is relating to the accounting for fair value changes in equity instruments. So, of course, what we will need is evidence of whether the requirements in IFRS 9 work as intended or not. The idea is not to reopen a theoretical debate as to whether or not OCI should be recycled to P&L or not. So that's something that is really important to flag. The second point we're hearing a lot coming from Europe is also the accounting for sustainability-linked bonds. And I think more generally it echoes as to what an interest rate is. And so probably once again we would like to hear more generally from stakeholders whether they have any evidence that the standard works well, works as intended or not. And it would be useful to hear your views on more globally, I mean, not necessarily today, but in the comment letters we will receive as to whether you have any proof that could help us assess how to appreciate these issue of what an interest rate, a market interest rate is. Those are notably the two issues I wanted to comment on. That's all the subjects I wanted to touch base on with you today. I don't know if you have any other questions, remarks, comments on the ISB update as a whole.
Yeah, just this is Mike. Just on that last yes. one on a market interest rate, and you mentioned the sustainability linkage. I think we are going to see a massive, and I am not exaggerating, a massive proliferation in loans, lines of credits, derivatives, bonds, reverse repos, every type of financial instrument. Within, I'm guessing, within 12 months' time is going to have a sustainability-linked feature. It is coming, and we are seeing this. And you know, I think especially for loans that are going to be held, and I really think it is important to be able to get to an amortized cost answer for those. I know that the board has discussed this, but I would just encourage the board to think again about this topic. I think especially as companies begin to manage to, self-targets for carbon emission reductions, and they begin to actively manage that, and we know that we're going to see transition costs. I mean, I personally believe that that is going to be part and parcel of a company's standard performance as it begins to, again, manage its operations in accordance with various transition rules and regulations achieve its net zero goals and any other regulations that may come into play. And I do think it's going to be, part and parcel of a company's standard operations. I think in my mind, it can equate to some of the broader things that we know get encompassed by the notion of credit risk. I realize that there could be some discomfort there, I think this is one of the things that we'll comment on, and we're super interested in this to get it to the right place. I get really concerned when I start thinking about big portfolios of loans that are going to be, held to maturity, and yet the answer is, well, Mike, they're fair value. They failed SPPI. I don't think it's a good accounting outcome. I don't think it's a good regulatory outcome. I actually don't think it's a good outcome for this type of market product, which I think is going to be really important for companies to use, but again, as they're managing their operations. So I would I'll get off my soapbox and leave you with that.
Thank you, Michael. Andreas, you want to comment?
Yes, I have a quick comment, Michael. I think the point that we are struggling with is if you don't record these instruments at fair value. I'm not saying is this decision useful or not. That's a separate debate. The question is, how could you establish the effective interest rate method if you don't account for the embedded, whatever it is, whether it meets the definition of a derivative or not, in projecting a future cash flow? That is the bit that is troubling us. So as long as you say, there is a feature in here, and I do not know what this feature will be for the prospective future, then how do you account for it? Do you only account for it once you see it and it kicks in, similarly to a variable rate instrument? That's the bit that we would require an answer to if the board decided, or should the board decide, to keep it within the amortized cost category. And don't get me wrong, this is not a debate, should not be a debate of, are you punished by us saying this is fair value accounting or not? It is about if the answer is this should be accounted for at amortized cost, and we agree that amortized cost means applying the effective interest rate method. How do you establish an effective interest rate? That's the question that needs to be answered. Thank you.
Yeah, and that's fair. And I personally think about it as what you just articulated, where it's a variable rate, and when it comes into effect, you take it into account. But I think it's something to be discussed and debated. I do think it can be overcome in a way that would be satisfactory from an accounting perspective. But duly noted, and I think that's, Andrea, something I can take away and think further about, and come back to the board and staff on that.
Super. Thank you.
Please.
Any further comments, remark on any subjects relating to ISB update?
Good one. Good comment.
Apparently not. So, no. So, Patrina, I leave you the floor for the Interpretations Committee update.
Thank you. Thank you, Bertrand. And good afternoon, good morning to evening to everyone. So I think what I wanted to do, like what I've done sometimes in the past, is just provide you with an update on some of the more recent discussions that have been happening at the Interpretations Committee. To facilitate this, we always thought just what's the best material to give you to update you, and of course we provided you with a IFRIC update from June and September. So clearly I'm happy to take any questions, comments anyone has on anything they've seen in those documents or otherwise around the Interpretations Committee. But maybe before handing over to you, I just wanted to highlight a couple of the more recent discussions. And I'm looking in particular at the September IFRIC update and the two questions that the committee discussed on cash. So as I say, I'm looking at the September IFRIC update, and the first one is on demand deposits with restrictions on use, which starts on page 2. So this was a question all about, as say, cash held in a demand deposit, where effectively that cash is sort of earmarked for a specified purpose. So the entity has this demand deposit. It can actually access the amounts in the account whenever it wants to, but it also has a contractual obligation with a third party to keep a specified amount of cash in that deposit and to use the cash only for that specified purpose. And if the entity were to use that cash for any other purpose, it would actually be in breach of its contract with the third party. So the question the committee got was about the presentation of that demand deposit. Is that demand deposit presented as cash and cash equivalents in the balance sheet and cash flow statement, or does the contractual restriction means that it's no longer cash for presentation purposes? And so what the committee said in response to that question is, yes, it is cash and cash equivalents for presentation purposes, both in the balance sheet and in the cash flow statement. And the background to that response is very much around what IS 7 says about cash. So IS 7 defines cash as comprising cash on hand and demand deposits, and there's really nothing else said in IS 7 about cash and what it is about that definition. So the definition really is very focused on the nature of the items. So if the nature of the item is that it's cash on hand or it's a demand deposit, then the item's cash. And in these particular facts the committee discussed, I think the demand deposit to us was just that, it's a demand deposit, because the entity can access the amounts held in the deposit on demand. And the terms of the contract with the third party have no effect on the entity's ability to access those amounts. So the committee concluded in this case that third-party contractual obligation had no effect on the nature of these amounts. So tentatively, and in the tentative agenda decision, the committee is saying that the amount held in that demand deposit would be presented as cash, both in the cash flow statement and in the balance sheet. Now, importantly in this case, as we say, it is a fact pattern where we're saying you present it as cash, but there are some restrictions on the use of that cash, and there would be therefore some important disclosures that potentially that entity might want to make around that. So the committee had quite a good and detailed discussion, I think, around what might be some of the relevant disclosure requirements there. And the tentative agenda decision on page 3 highlights some of what the committee viewed as relevant disclosure requirements in IAS 7. Also in IFRS 7 around liquidity risk, because of course restrictions on the use of cash balances could affect an entity's liquidity risk, and also just highlighting some of the general disclosure requirements as well in IAS 1. So that was demand deposits on restrictions on use. I'll quickly mention the next tentative agenda decision on cash and then maybe pause to see if there's any particular questions or comments. So maybe if I move on to cash received via electronic transfer. So as we say, two submissions on cash, but very different questions about cash. And this one was very much about when to recognise cash received, when you're receiving it via electronic transfer, and when you're receiving it as settlement for a trade receivable. And so in this case, it's a case, as I say, the receiving entity, the question was specifically, does the receiving entity recognise that cash on the date that the payer initiates the transfer, or instead does it recognise it on the date that it actually receives the cash? And the question came up in the context of an electronic transfer system that, of course, takes more than one day to settle cash transfers. And of course, it's most important if that period of transfer straddles a reporting date. So in our fact pattern, it was the case that the payment was initiated on a reporting date, but the cash was only received by the receiving entity after the reporting date. So I think what the committee said here is when you're looking at this and looking at when to recognise cash, then first of all, it's important to look at the transaction as a whole. So in this case, the cash is being received as settlement for a trade receivable. So you're both looking, you're first looking at when the entity would de-recognise the trade receivable and then looking at when to recognise the cash. And of course, both in thinking about de-recognition of the trade receivable and the recognition of cash, you're within the requirements in IFRS 9 because these are all financial instruments. So what did the committee say, or what does IFRS 9 say? Well, first of all, in looking at the derecognition of the trade receivable, other than when you transfer a financial asset, then IFRS 9 requires an entity to derecognise a financial asset when and only when the entity's rights to the cash flows from the financial asset expire. So in this particular case, the entity would be looking at when its rights to the cash flows from the trade receivable expire. Now, what the committee said, though, of course, assessing when your rights to the cash flows expire, that is, you know, a legal matter. It'll depend on looking at the specific facts and circumstances. And of course, in this case, you'd need to look at the, you know, applicable laws, regulations, and of course, the terms of how the electronic transfer system might work. But of course, for example, if the entity's rights to receive the cash from its customer expires only when it receives the cash into its bank account, then it would derecognise the trade receivable only when it recognises the cash in its bank account. Then if we go on to look at the other side of the transaction, when do you recognise the cash you receive, debit cash? Again, what does IFRS 9 say? It says you're recognising a financial asset in that case when the entity becomes party to the contractual provisions of the instrument, which in this case would be when the cash is deposited in the entity's bank account, because it's at that point that the entity actually has a contractual right to obtain the cash from the bank for any amounts that are deposited there. So those are the most recent discussions on cash. I'm going to pause there. There might be, I know cash is something that affects everybody. Hopefully we all have cash and entities have cash. And the other reason is that these tentative agenda decisions are both still open for comment. So if this discussion spurs any of you into thinking you want to write us comment letters on it, please do so, because the comment period is open until the 25th of November.
Thank you, Patrina. Is there any comment or question on the two projects or on the two questions Patrina explained to you? No?
No. Okay. So now I'll be briefer on the discussions and highlighting just the discussions in the June meeting. The reason I'm going to be briefer is I'll be brief up front, but then you must ask questions if you have them. But the reason I'm going to be brief is the two topics that were discussed for the first time in June, which relate to Tiltro 3 transactions and economic benefits from useful wind farm. I'd say they're much more specialised in the sense that the Tiltro 3 transactions deal with funding provided by the ECB to banks So of course it doesn't affect everyone. And equally, economic benefits from use of a wind farm was a very specific question to do with a power purchase agreement between a wind farm and a purchaser of electricity produced by the wind farm. So the June IFRIC update, I maybe won't say anything more until I hear there's interest. They're quite.
If I may, just on the TLTRO3 issue, maybe just to mention, I was still an interpretations committee member at the time. It was in June 2021, I remember perfectly that the question was around what is an interest rate. Once again, it's also specifically an issue whereby interpretations committee members had very mixed views on what should be considered as an interest rate, whether it was just the variable portion or the variable portion minus the subsidy provided by the ECB to European banks. So, and of course, it echoes the discussions we had earlier. And notably the interactions between Michael and Andreas on sustainability linked bonds. That is another illustration of probably a much broader issue on what is an interest rate.
No, that's good. I agree with the point you highlight, Bertrand, because again, if people look into this, the wording in the June IFRIC update, a large part of the discussion is around calculating the effective interest rate.
Exactly.
For these particular loans. So as you say, it cuts across broader than these. Whilst the question is around those specific transactions, there's quite a lot of discussion about calculating the effective interest rate. In a sense, and whether and how you take into account when you're estimating expected future cash flows, whether and how you take into account, in this case, by the way, whether the bank is going to satisfy conditions, because of course the funding from the ECB that's set up in these tranches is sort of dependent or linked to the banks themselves providing particular amounts of loans to, it's to encourage loans to particular entities. So I wasn't necessarily going to say more, but I'm open to any questions on that.
No question, apparently. Do you want to touch base on the coming two yes. amendments?
Oh, I can do, yes. Yes. I first of all, maybe was just going to give you a quick insight. No, but I will do, Bertrand. Thank you. I'll give you a quick insight. Obviously, the next committee meeting is coming up at the end of November. The agenda is not in the public domain yet, but I'll give you a little sneak preview into what we expect. I use the word expect, of course, things might change. But there's a couple of, I think, interesting topics coming for discussion at the November committee meeting. We expect that the committee will talk about, first of all, a question on IAS 37. Is it a liability or not? In the context of regulation that is there to encourage the production and the import of low energy vehicles. Or vehicles and cars that are better for the environment. By the way, that submission that we have is on our website already if people are interested, but we expect the committee will talk about that in November, and I think it is a really interesting one. The reason it's an IAS 37 question, it's in the context of where entities are in a deficit position. So according to the regulation, they're in a deficit in terms of not meeting targets in the sense to produce or import a particular target of new or low energy vehicles. So it's about, is there an obligation or not? And the other topic, which again I think is very interesting, is an IFRS 15 question, principal versus agent. And it's specifically a software reseller. And it's in the context of course saying that with relation to the sale of software licenses, is that reseller a principal or an agent? So again, I think both very interesting topics, and we expect those to come to the November committee meeting.
The
amendments, yeah. Yeah, so maybe finally, Bertrand, you're right. Two other things that are in the zone of maintenance and consistent application, of course, and were mentioned on the update slides, is that there are two forthcoming narrow scope exposure drafts coming your way for comment. And they're coming your way within the next couple of weeks. Both should be published before the end of November. The first one is on the classification of liabilities with covenants. You may be aware, and both of these, by the way, narrow scope amendments, both topics started as questions that came into the Interpretations Committee. So you may be aware we talked about them with you earlier this year. So as I say, the first one is an exposure draft to do with classification of liabilities, classification as current or non-current. So that both addresses the classification itself. What do you take into account when you've got covenants to be met within the 12 months after the reporting date? You know, whether you take those into account or not when you're classifying the liabilities as current or non-current, and there's some proposals around presentation and disclosure in there. The second exposure draft, again coming your way, is on what we're calling supplier finance arrangements, so supply chain finance or reverse factoring, lots of different names for those arrangements, but that is a narrow scope disclosure project. So again, some proposals to add some specific disclosure requirements for supplier finance arrangements.
Is there any question or comment relating to the update provided by Patruna on the activities of the Interpretations Committee? No, and I did not forget you, Srinath. I know you wanted to add a comment on the ISB update, am I correct?
Yeah, it is on the last item, especially on the supplier finance arrangements. Yes, my industry, I'm coming from logistics and supply chain logistics industry. So this is very relevant for us. I'm looking forward to see the exposure draft and see how that would impact my company. And what I can say is this is something which has taken a momentum during the recent days. And there's a lot of supply chain financing arrangements we are entering into. And this will be very useful.
Great, thank you. We'll look forward to hearing from you. Yeah, and we may be in contact during the comment period then as well, as we'll look forward to receiving your comment letters.
Perfect. Any other comments?